It's June 25th, 2017. This is Movies Podcast number 210, the Correcting the Alt Facts in Podcast 209 edition. I'm Todd Agosawara with my alleged good friend, John Westfall.
I am your good friend, Todd. Absolutely everything that was negative towards you in that last podcast was all John's horrible work. I didn't want to say any of it at all.
Yeah, right.
He made me do it. And
Evil Don Sorcinelli.
He is so evil. The only thing more evil than that would be to turn completely against a friend and say that it wasn't their fault completely.
Right. At any rate, and thank you very much to Don Sorcinelli, a.k.a. Don Cicilline, a.k.a. I've called him a few things. I can't remember the alt names that he's been called, but I think he likes Cicilline the best. I didn't say that one, though. I think that was one of his teachers.
Yep.
But in any case, thanks for the first Movies Podcast that I wasn't actually in, and it was a good chance to try out this Zoom.us. Is that what we're using, John?
Yes, it is.
So this was suggested to us by my friend Paul Lawler a while back when I was searching for a way to record without using my Mac because the Rogue Amoeba audio hijack upgrade is not an upgrade to me. It's like a downgrade, and I don't want to use it. But anyway, so they tried it last week. I listened to it. I was a little concerned that there might be some volume leveling problems, but didn't notice anything, so John and I are trying it again this week. So thanks. Anyway, thanks, Don. And now let me correct a few things or clarify a few things maybe from last week. So I was caught in this traffic jam caused by a water main break in a highway. Mm-hmm. And we've had a bunch. In fact, I think there are three water main breaks on Oahu as I speak. Sunday, which I am not caught in, fortunately. But how do you have a traffic jam on a small island? And the answer is we've got a lot of people, not quite a million people on a relatively small island. We are not the largest island in the Hawaiian chain. And a limited landmass means that you have limited places to put roads, which means when anything is blocked, you have very few alternatives to take, and hence the traffic jams. And so basically a lot of cars, not a lot of road, and anything is a problem.
So for those of us that are not in Hawaii, we figure if we were there, we would be hanging out on a beach. And so we don't understand why you would ever use roads.
Because you need to go on the road to get to the beach.
we would just get there and stay there. You know?
And some people do. In fact, there's a lot of homeless people in the beaches these days. Which is another interesting topic, but not technical.
Technical in that hopefully they're not homeless because Google discontinued the product they were working on.
No, well, golly, yeah. No, it's just quite much sadder than that even, but none that I have a good solution for, and nobody else does either, so I guess I shouldn't feel bad about that. But I do feel bad in general. Mm-hmm. Next alt fact, dailydoodlers.com. I tried to get Doodle a Day, which I guess it just sounds just as bad, but that was already taken. Daily Doodle. Anyway, dailydoodlers.com was around, so I paid my $12 to Google Domains and bought it. And I'm not spending a lot of time on it. And that's the whole idea of this doodle thing, what I call a doodle versus a drawing. So to me, a drawing is something that's pretty serious. You spend a lot of time at it. You think about it a lot. You mess around with it. Try to get it as best as possible. To me, a doodle, this is just my definition of doodles, nobody else's. For me, a doodle is something that's no more than 15 minutes of drawing at a time. And the doodle is complete at the end of 15 minutes. It's not like I'm going to do 15 minutes now and try to do another 15 minutes later. No, it's done. Whatever it is, it is. And I just wanted a way to kind of use my Apple Pencil, which had been sitting there unused since April 2016. I think somewhere near New Year's Eve 2016. Like, man, this thing has been, this $100 device has been just sitting here doing nothing except losing its charge every time I forget not to charge it. And so I thought, well, maybe if I start drawing, I'll learn to draw. Yeah. And so I pulled out the pencil. I charged it up on New Year's Eve, I think. And the next day, January 1st, 2017, I said, every day I will do at least one drawing, one doodle of no more than 15 minutes. And so that's what I've been doing. And I don't know. I thought maybe other people might be interested. Probably not. But let me give you some stats. So I have done 172 doodles, 172 days since the first day of the year, which means I've spent about 2,580 minutes, maybe a little less, or about 43 hours, which sounds like a lot of time. So that's about, we're about half year mark now. So it's, you know, 43 hours sounds like a lot. That's a week, right? A working week. I have spent a working week doodling. But what does that mean? Well, if you use Malcolm Gladwell's thesis rule, or rule, that it takes 10,000 hours of deliberate practice to become a world-class whatever in anything, it's going to take me about 109 years to hit 10,000 hours. At my age, at any age, I don't think you're going to do it. So doing something at 15 minutes a day is not how you get to be a world-class, but it is a lot of fun, and it's not a lot of effort, I guess. Doesn't take a whole lot of time out of your day, so no matter what you're doing, you can still do it. And there you go. So at the end of this calendar year, I should have 91.25 hours of doodling under my belt, so to speak, or under my pencil.
And while Todd has been talking about this, I have been using my Apple Pencil for about the most use it's gotten in a very long time. To
he's been waving in front of the camera.
Wave it in front of the camera and taunt Todd with it. And I will speak about why I was kind of frustrated with the Apple Pencil in a little bit after we finished with the alternate facts.
Okay. So the third and final alternate – it's not really an alternative fact, but just a commentary on something you guys are talking about. I think, John, you mentioned a friend – talking about the problems of international travel these days.
And there was a lot of Donna's friends, but I'll steal it.
Donna's friends?
Not a problem, yeah.
Yeah. And saying, well, you know, if you had a burner laptop, and you know a Chromebook is pretty darn close to a burner laptop as you can get these days. You can find it for under $200. You can find a Windows 10 laptop for under $200 these days, actually. But the Chromebook is really good because you can just erase it like boom. You know, just wipe it before you leave a country or whatever, and then when you get to your destination, you can restore it.
You know, the more I've thought about the conversation we had last podcast, the more I've realized that packing and luggage is a real pain.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I'm ready for full burner everything.
Burner clothes.
Get off the plane wearing just whatever I walked out to the plane with.
Yeah.
Pick up a suitcase that's got everything I've already pre-laid out in it. Yeah. Clothes, laptop, technology, chargers, whatever. At the end of the day, pack it all back in that suitcase and just drop it off at the airport and head home.
And that's what I've been trying to do for the past year. Just before I went to Scotland, I think, I discovered this travel expert, Rick Steves, who has a PBS show. And I've mentioned him on this show a couple of times on YouTube. And I started watching him just for his information about Scotland and England and, you know, places like that since I was going there. And then after I started listening to him, he makes a lot of sense about a lot of different topics. And so he has a couple of series on packing and how he has travel tours that he takes people on. He's a fairly large travel company. And he says, you know, the folks who go on these tours aren't allowed to take any checked-in baggage. It's only what you can carry or pull, you know, onto a plane. So it has to fit in the overhead bin, has to fit under the seat. And I said, do you know that? Is that possible? I mean, I know people that do it. I just didn't know if I could do it. And so my next trip, which was to London, I said, I'm going to do it. So I actually went on his website and bought his recommended travel backpack / suitcase. It fits an overhead bin. It is one linear inch smaller than the dimensions of at least U.S. Airlines. There's a Flybe in, what's Flybe, Ireland? I don't know, England. One of the UK-ish companies that whose overhead is so tiny you can barely fit your shoebox up there. But anyway, aside from that, aside from Flybe, It fits everywhere. Anyway, so that's what I've been doing lately. So I just take the backpack he recommends, pack minimal amount of clothes that I need, have a carry-on. I don't take a laptop. I haven't done that in years. And take some Scotty Vest hoodie or something to carry additional stuff in. So, you know, Scotty Vest jacket or hoodie makes a great unauthorized third carry-on. Mm-hmm. Or I guess I should say authorized third carry-on, since it's actually clothing. And that's what I've been doing. It's working great. But you do have to be disciplined.
Yeah. And I have not checked baggage in, let's see, the last flight that I took that I checked baggage on was in 1999.
Wow.
So.
When you were 5 years old.
A little older than that. But I think that was it. I've been with others who have checked bags. I've had to wait at baggage claim.
Right, that's a giant pain, right?
But for me, it's always been just get on, walk through security. I do the same thing with Scotty vests where I'll pack up the stuff in a Scotty vest if I can so that I don't have to take everything off. I guess I could take everything off. That would cause an interesting scene at security. But it's really, once you do it once, you will become addicted to it, and you will really start noticing what you don't use on future trips and stop taking those things, because
totally agree with you.
You just don't need them.
Yep. And you bypass a lot of stuff, really. Mm-hmm. And in Hawaii, you know, it turns out that, well, in Hawaii, when you leave Hawaii to go to the mainland U.S., you have to go through an agriculture check before you check in your baggage. So your checked-in baggage has to go through this ag check process. And it doesn't open till 9 a.m., mm-hmm. 8 a.m., you know, something like that. If you get there earlier than that, you basically got to wait in line to go through ag check with your checked-in baggage. Well, the last time I had to do that, I didn't have any checked-in baggage, so I just walked past it.
Yeah.
Went straight to, verify my boarding pass and no, I didn't have to do that. I knew my boarding pass was good, so I went straight to TSA.
that's the thing. If you fly and you aren't going straight to TSA, you are not taking advantage of printing out boarding passes in advance, checking in advance, not checking baggage. You know, the only place I stop before TSA might be to print out like an actual paper boarding pass if I've only checked in online. And that's the kiosk that you walk right up to and just hit a couple buttons and you're done. So
totally agree.
Yeah.
Minimum. And we'll get to more later. We're going to talk about the iPad Pros and things, but you wanted to go back to the Apple Pencil rant, I think, or something.
Well, I can throw that in when I talk about my iPad Pro rant.
Okay.
So, your Chromebook, I believe you had a rant about.
Yeah, I got a little mini rant. Samsung Chromebook Plus is still something I use daily. Now, it's what I pop up when I come home and check email and things like that. It's just super, super handy. There is just one problem. It's Bluetooth radio stack sucks. And it's not just with one thing. It will cut off Bluetooth speakers, Bluetooth earbuds, Bluetooth mice. And you're using it, and all of a sudden it stops working. You know, like you're listening to something over a Bluetooth speaker connected to it, wirelessly, of course. And all of a sudden it stops and the speaker on the Samsung Chromebook Plus starts playing again, which is, I don't know what the deal is. It's had several Chrome OS updates since I bought it in February, whenever it came. So I don't know. It's not like they're not updating it. It's just a terrible stack. It's reminiscent to me of, Android used to have a really terrible Bluetooth stack. Although now it's not so bad.
Very true. That was always the bane of my existence were buggy Bluetooth stacks. Of course, that was because I usually was on the cutting edge of Bluetooth.
Yeah.
So whatever you could do with Bluetooth, I was doing at the time. My favorite example of that was in 2005, using a pocket PC to connect over Bluetooth dial-up networking with my smartphone so that when the pocket PC tried to connect to something, it would automatically create the Bluetooth connection, dial out through the smartphone, and connect over GPRS. And that is something that I still can't exactly do today. The closest I can come to that today is from my iPad being able to turn on personal hotspot from the iPad to the iPhone. But it was handy. You never had to take your phone out. You just it looked like you had a data connection on the device. So
yeah, I do have one more rant that I don't have in our show notes. It just occurred to me as I was popping on the computer, and that is low-end consumer printers.
Yes.
So, you know, it used to be I'd buy a printer and it would last for years. And in fact, generally speaking, the only reason I would buy a new printer was not because the old printer broke, because I needed a new feature of some kind. You know, I needed a scanner, which, you know, the printer used to just be printers in old days, or I needed a color or higher resolution, or it was something I wanted to add to my feature set. Nowadays, I buy a printer and I have to replace it every 12 to 18 months, it seems like. The major problem appears to be, to me, the stupid proprietary ink cartridge thing.
Yes.
Where I've almost, and I'm not pointing fingers at any particular manufacturer, I'm pointing fingers at all of them. HP, Canon, Epson, I have had endless problems with their own branded cartridges not being recognized. It is just, and these are not cheap things. I mean, the cartridges cost as much as a printer, which is why I just tend to buy new printers. You know, it's like, the heck with it trying to debug this thing. I'll spend another $90 on a cheap printer and use it for 18 months or 12 months or whatever.
Yeah, my current printer over here is a cheap printer that I bought in 2014, and it has not reliably printed anything since probably 2015. Today, I don't even know why we really still have it, because whenever I need to print something, I usually just print it off at work. I don't even use the scanner because the scanner can't directly scan to email. It has to scan to an SD card software. So really, it just takes up space on my desk.
Yeah. Well, and it's just mind-boggling because, you know, I have a Epson printer that most recently, it didn't die. To me, it's fully functional. It's just that it won't recognize Epson's own inkjet cartridges. But because it can't recognize it, essentially I can't use a scanner, I can't use the copier. Yeah, because there's no ink, but, you know, at least a scanner, right? So I had to replace it because it doesn't recognize its own inkjet cartridges. And it just got, you know, it started off as, it would take me a couple of tries. And finally, about two weeks ago, it just gave up the ghost. It wouldn't recognize anything, including the cartridge I just removed and put back in.
Yeah, I'm thinking when this printer dies that I have here, I did buy years ago a color laser printer. It was a Lexmark. And I got about 5 years of use out of it, which is a little less than I actually wanted to get out of it. I'm not sure why there was a problem with it, but it just kind of went on its own. But I think the next thing I will get will be a color multifunction laser. I'll spend, you know, $400 or $500 just to get something that I know has more than a few years, just because I don't feel like buying $100 printer every year. I'll buy, you know, $500 printer and hope it lasts 5 years.
Yeah, let me know how that goes, because I don't have a lot of faith in these printer manufacturers anymore. But anyway, on to happier news. Well, I guess happy news plus a rant.
Yeah, so we were talking about Apple Pencil, and the Apple Pencil that I've been taunting Todd with actually is one I bought when I bought my iPad Pro in 2015.
Okay.
And last year, I used my iPad Pro, the 12.9-inch, for about a year full-time. And then at work last fall, I got a Surface Pro 4.
Mm-hmm.
And then in January, when I was going back for the semester, I thought, you know, I'm only going to carry one tablet. I really don't want to carry two tablets, especially two big tablets.
Right.
So I put the iPad Pro in a drawer. And in that drawer, it has sat since January, because I have an iPad Air 2 that I use for, you know, big books and taking out and things, you know, doing stuff around work-wise. And I have an iPad Mini that I use for ebooks and my iPhone. So finally last week, I thought, you know, it's just doing me no good. And I've been always a little annoyed that I couldn't use my Apple Pencil with my iPad Air 2.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, I'm just going to sell the iPad Pro 12.9-inch.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 32 gig. I'm going to upgrade to an iPad Pro 10.5-inch, the one that just came out with 256. And I'll sell the Air 2 as well at some point, you know, and just recoup, just pay basically an additional surcharge to upgrade.
Right.
So, Todd, I'm going to ask you, how much do you think the upgrade is? If you sell an iPad Pro 12.9 and then use that money from eBay to buy a 10.5 and go from 32 gigs to 256.
How much? Okay, now the 12.9 was pretty costly, even for the relatively the lowest end, which is a 32 gig you have.
Yep.
That was about 900, I'm going to say. Maybe more.
Yeah, I can't. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was when I originally bought it.
And I've been looking at the exact same model you bought with the 256 gigs, and I think that was about $899 also.
Yep.
So I'm going to guess your price differential is about $400.
You're really close. It was about $500.
Wow.
Mostly because I also bought the smart keyboard for the new iPad.
Oh, okay, right.
And a sleeve for it, so that's got some protection. The sleeve that's got the Apple Pencil holder at the top of it. Okay. But yeah, I sold the 12.9-inch for just over $500 on eBay. It came with a smart cover and a smart keyboard. I didn't sell the Apple Pencil because I needed that. But I'm not too unhappy about that. For 2 years, to jump technology-wise, to jump to something that I think I'll use a little bit more. In fact, I might actually carry it with me. In addition to the Surface Pro, I'm okay with spending that for the upgrade. But I did have a bit of an interesting experience on eBay that I'd not had before because I haven't been selling on eBay lately. When I initially listed the iPad Pro, I looked at completed auctions, which is what you should always do, is look at what the actual things that you're selling are going for, not what people are asking for them, but what they've actually sold. And I saw that the average price that this was going for was between $450, $550, somewhere in that range, you know, nothing too high, etc. So I thought, okay, I will list it for a buy it now of $469.99. So I did that, and then I listed the auction to start at 99 cents, which you just do anyway. That's what I've always done. And no reserve, because reserve prices just scare people away. So within about 2 hours of the auction being listed, I had two people send me a question. And these were the only two questions I got the entire 5 days that the auction was up. Okay. Both of them were asking me to drop the price and promising that they would buy it now. One wanted me to drop it to, I think, $440 and throw in free shipping, and the other wanted me to drop it to $400 and throw in free shipping. And I thought, geez, since when do you haggle on eBay?
Yeah.
But that sort of shocked me. I haven't gotten that before. Maybe that just was me being lucky and all the, you know, 100 other things or so I've sold on eBay, or if it was just nowadays that's what people are doing, trying to haggle. And then, of course, my usual amusement at people who think they're going to get it for 99 cents. The first bids on the auction were things like 99 cents. Okay. Then $1.60. Okay. So you literally just went a dollar, you know, over 99. Yeah. Whatever. And then it jumped to like $4 and then $6. And eventually, after a little bit, it went to 25 and then 30. And, you know, just it sort of amuses me, the people who really buy into the eBay dream where they think they're going to pick up a $500 iPad for
99 cents.
But
hey, well, you got to try.
You can't win if you never try.
Right. Okay. So I have a couple of questions. Why did you, so did you get the 10.5 because that's a more convenient size, or?
Well, because what? I found myself using the Air 2 more often than the Pro, and I thought if I could replace the Air 2 and get an Apple Pencil to use, you know, be able to use the Apple Pencil, ideal thing, especially for taking places and doing note-taking, because the Surface Pro 4 can do note-taking, but I don't particularly like it as much as I've liked taking notes on an iPad.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know, like the Surface Pen is capable. It's just not as comfortable.
Yeah. And quite frankly, even though the Surface Pro 4 has a nice, beautiful screen, really, it is not a good touchable or touch experience, pen or otherwise. So that's my comment on that. And you went to 256 gigs because I have a 32 gigabyte iPad Pro as well, and I'm feeling the pain of that decision.
Yeah,
now. Yeah,
I've had pain with that decision on my iPhone. I went to 32 the last time I upgraded last November, and so I kind of think 32 I've outgrown. So nothing smaller than 64 for me anymore.
Yeah.
And I thought 256 because I could do I could download offline versions of videos, shows and videos. And
yeah, stuff. That's and so I went with 32 gigs because I didn't expect to do anything except consume streaming media, basically watch Netflix and that sort of thing. You know, just kind of sitting around the house. But the iPad Pro is such a wonderful device, and especially after I started doodling my daily doodles. It's you know, it's starting to fill up. I think I've got about 6 gigabytes free now, which is still okay, but I know it's going to start getting tight. So I've been looking at the one you bought, also.
I think I'll be happy with it. It should show up about a week from today. So
nice. Oh, you haven't gotten it yet?
Nope, okay. Not yet. I got the accessories, ironically.
Okay, now you said you bought a cover and a smart keyboard.
It's the slip cover that you just kind of slip the whole iPad into. Mm-hmm. And so it's basically a carrying case for it, and the smart pencil will fit on the top. And then the smart keyboard goes over like a smart cover, just like it does.
Right. The iPad Pro. So does the slip cover go over the keyboard and the iPad together, or is it just the iPad?
It is supposed to, according to the questions and answers on Apple.com.
Okay. I'm looking forward to seeing what you learn about that. And what are we going to do about carrying the Apple Pencil around?
Well, it fits in the slip cover. That's why the cover, because it's got a little holder at the top for the pencil.
Okay, so let me say something about the smart cover, which I like. I've made good use of it. It's a good keyboard, and not a great keyboard, but good keyboard, and it makes a convenient stand while typing or just viewing. Anything, but it is fraying around the edges, which I think I mentioned last time. And, it's 13 months old. What is it? It's June. 14 months old now. And a $160 cover should not start fraying in 14 months.
Yeah, mine didn't show anywhere like that after I used it for over a year. So
yeah.
I wonder if you might have gotten one that wasn't completely put together, but...
Yeah, I should take a picture of it. I should probably take it to the Genius Bar, although it's darn near impossible to get an appointment. and if I do buy the new iPad Pro 10.5 inch, I think I'm going to get the Logitech keyboard for it.
Yeah, that is the other one that's very popular for them.
Which I think is backlit and has some other nice features. Mm-hmm. Now, while we're talking about iPad Pros, I should mention that, in the beginning of the podcast, I noted that John and I are experimenting with something he used with Don last week, and that's Zoom.us to record this podcast instead of the normal Rogue Amoeba audio hijack that I have been using for 2008, for 9 years now. But it's the latest update is just driving me wonky. So I'm using an iPad Pro to record this. So I've got my little my $30 Apple earbuds that came with iPad Pro. Or iPhone 7, I don't know, one of those things, plugged into my iPad Pro's Lightning port. And John, you're using a MacBook or something?
Yeah, I'm on my MacBook Pro. So
now, could you have started this session on an iPad Pro?
Yes,
you could have. Okay, so we could have not used any traditional computer at all.
We could have done this over iPhones, actually. Zoom has actually been very useful to me. I use it at work, and so that's why I have the ability to try it out here.
All right. Well, I have to debate whether it's worthwhile for me to pay for this service. I guess you can get it for free for 40 minutes, but we often talk over 40 minutes. So,
unless you want to splice.
There's that, I guess. Okay, now you have one more thing on the show notes.
Well, one interesting thing. So this week I got an email to my .edu email address with a subscription offer for the New York Times. Okay. And I've never subscribed to really any newspaper, but I thought, I might be interested in that, especially since the price was with the crossword $2.50 a week. I thought, well, that's not too bad.
No.
kind of that was the academic pricing, and they're actually running a sale that's just a little more expensive than that. That's for everyone. It's about $3 a week. But I went to pay for it, and it popped up an Apple Pay prompt, which I was kind of happy to see, because Apple Pay is, of course, a lot faster to pay for than putting in your credentials and your credit card number and all that thing. But it didn't like my email address in Apple Pay, because it was my Apple ID, which is not a .edu. Now, the interesting thing about that was, though, when I actually looked at the Apple Pay screen a little closer, I found that I could actually change the email address that I was paying with. It didn't have to be my Apple ID. It could be any of the email addresses that are on my iPhone, and one of them is my .edu. So I selected it and used it, and the payment went through without a problem. So I thought that was very interesting. I didn't even realize that Apple Pay could, I knew it could allow for alternate ship to addresses, but I didn't know that it could allow for alternate email addresses. I thought it always was tied to your Apple ID.
That's pretty interesting. Especially as, you know, I don't know if I should admit this. I have never used Apple Pay at all.
Well, so I'll tell you what. I'll do something that you'll owe me money for, and then you can use it the first time to send it to me when we get iOS.
Let's see. I think that's about it. I have nothing else in the show notes, unless you have something you'd like to add.
I'm good. I think we're all set on this one.
All right. So, Mobley's Podcast 210. Trying something, well, different for me. John and Don used this service last week. We might go back to Rogue Amoeba. I still have to contact Rogue Amoeba to see if they can fix that problem for me. Or not fix it. Maybe I'm just doing something wrong. But to me, if I transfer over a workflow from one of their products to their upgraded product, it should just work. But that's not the case. All right, John. Thank you once again, and we will see you next time.